From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 846, Developer Practices That Help Sysadmins, with guest Rick Taylor. Recorded Tuesday, August 9th, 2022. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Hi, this is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. Bringing back a friend of mine, Rick Taylor, who is a senior cloud support engineer with Carvana. And he supports the infrastructure assets in Google Cloud, AWS, and Azure. So he's all the good big clouds. And Rick is also responsible for the architectural designs for automation initiatives in the technology services division at Carvana. Welcome back, Rick.
Thank you very much. It's awesome to be here.
Glad to have you. And, you know, you did spend some time at Microsoft, as I recall, when we talked last
time.
That
is correct.
Which was a while ago now, a year and a half, 2 years ago. And now you've been working on all the clouds. Like, it's got to be fun to see them all and spend time with them all.
It is. It is. You know, the funny thing about that is that they're very, very similar.
Mm-hmm.
They just use different language. It's kind of like the human, all of us on this planet, we're all the same biologically.
Yes.
But we have these different languages.
Yeah.
And different cultures. And that is what the cloud is. It's, they all have the same biology.
Right.
We all access them the same way, but there's different languages. You know, in AWS, I call it a VPC. But in Azure, I'll call it a virtual network.
Right. But they're fundamentally the same thing.
They're the same.
Different syntax, I mean, a little different culture. But bottom line is you need some kind of virtual network, and here's what it looks like in this place versus that place.
Yep.
Do you see them having different focuses, like they have different strengths as well?
Yeah. I think Azure is trying to, as is Microsoft, trying to be the end-all, be-all for everything. and sometimes they step on themselves in attempting to do this. And in the end, it's very friendly. Very, very friendly.
Right.
The big user interface is very easy to navigate. Not so with AWS, but they're the granddaddy. And so they don't have to be, really. Everybody understands AWS. They've been around. They were the number one guy. And,
they were the
900-pound gorilla. And working with them, you can do anything you want. You don't have to. I mean, every nuance to cloud computing, AWS is tackled, and you can do it.
Nice.
GCP is the new guy on the block.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have a very user-friendly interface. Not as many colors, I guess, as Microsoft, but still, you know, it's there. And the navigation, in my opinion, is a little bit more intuitive than Azure, because that left navigation doesn't change. It's always there, and you can always move around. And their built-in tagging system is a lot more mature than, say, Azure. But it does lack some things, integrations with other, a CI/CD orchestrator.
Right.
They're not quite there, whereas that's built in to, say, AWS or Azure.
Right.
So they all have strengths, weaknesses, and costs on top of that.
Sure. What they charge for.
What they charge is different for certain things, and is cheaper and sometimes in GCP than it is in Azure, and mostly expensive for AWS. But
Do you see any of those clouds as more dev-centric than sysadmin-centric?
Ooh, good question. I would probably think that Azure is probably extremely dev-centric.
Interesting.
At the end of the day, Microsoft is a software company, and developers.
Yeah.
You can write anything that will integrate pretty much in Azure. With GCP, not so much. It's much more admin focused. They do have a lot of hooks and APIs that you can connect to in GCP. But if I wanted to write a logic app versus doing that in GCP. Much easier in Azure, in my opinion. The gcloud commands in GCP, extremely helpful and useful, but in the end, PowerShell rules everything, and you can do PowerShell everywhere.
Even on GCP?
Even on GCP.
Wow, yeah.
You can use PowerShell anyway, in AWS, all of it.
Right.
And you can use it across your clients as well, Linux,
yep.
Mac. So, yeah.
They have been successful in Jeff Snover just recently left the company, the godfather of yeah. PowerShell. But
I just talked to him a couple of weeks ago, and Jeffrey and I have known each other for a number of years. And I'm like, so what are you going to do? I hate that question, he says to me.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, he is a fellow that likes to work. So I don't yes. imagine he's not going to stay busy. But it's interesting to have him moved on. But his success in propagating PowerShell throughout the industry. You know, I'll include links in the show notes for, yeah, there are PowerShell tools for every one of those big three clouds. If you want to use them, they're there. And, I find in the Windows world, most folks are still hanging out in PowerShell 5, where when you get yeah. out into the broader community, it's all PowerShell 7.
Yes. PowerShell 7 is where you really want to be. Now, there are some, even in Azure, if you are not doing things in Cloud Shell, it seems that PowerShell 5 allows you to do a lot more
yeah.
than PowerShell 7, which is the most recent version. I found that to be frustrating at times when I want to do automation. And it's like, oh, I don't recognize that command. What are you talking about? You don't recognize that command. let me do this under the context of PowerShell 5. Oop, there you go. Why?
Absolutely. Now, and it is funny, the line that crossed. A buddy of mine, who's an IT fellow, who, and I were working together yesterday, and I'm watching him rip out PowerShell for some problems we were dealing with. And it's coding, man. Like, it's as codish. I've spent more time as a developer as I have as an IT pro, although I've certainly lived in both worlds. But boy, watching someone I know who over 20 years has grown purely as a sysadmin, but in the past couple of years has just grown these coding chops because it gets his work done, and to the point where he's ripping code out.
You have to get to that point.
Yeah.
You have to do that. And I'm dealing with that at Carvana, where our group has grown. When I came onto Carvana 2 years ago, almost exactly, there were three of us
right.
on our team. One person was AWS, one person was GCP, I was the Azure guy.
Right.
And I had the most experience in PowerShell. And so I was helping my coworkers, like, hey, we really need to start using PowerShell so we could do this automation. And as our team has grown, we're now at 8. And we grew from less than 8,000 to now 30,000 employees.
Wow.
And we are having to really write a lot of code. And we're sysadmins. Okay. Everybody on my team has come from, we used to deal with installing software on laptops, installing servers, configuring, yeah. doing all kinds of
racking
stuff.
Racking and stacking, flipping disks. Yeah, like that was exactly. the gig.
That was the gig. Mm. And now we are like, okay, everything's connected now.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, we're not even having to rack and stack anything anymore.
Yeah, I don't own the hardware anymore. I buy it by the minute.
It's all in the cloud. And how do we access that? Right. Well, gee, we use these tools. And we're having to become a lot more like our developer brothers and sisters and understand what this means. I am now working with our engineering team on onboarding scripts that will, from the moment someone gets their offer letter
yep.
to the moment they get their hardware is now all through CI/CD processes.
Sure. Yeah. The stuff that would normally be a developer pipeline for deploying software, you're talking about deploying employees.
Yes. And giving them the rights to the groups mm-hmm. and putting them in the right roles.
Yeah.
All of that is all written in code now. It's, if I would have talked to a sysadmin 10 years ago and I said, oh, we're going to write this API, their eyes would have rolled in the back of their head. Like, what are you talking
That's
about?
That's not my job.
No.
Not to digress, but let me ask you a question. You use the term sysadmin just as comfortably as I do. How do you prefer sysadmin over IT pro?
Yeah, see, I identify the term IT pro with being a Microsoft certified trainer.
Right.
IT pro meant you taught the admin types of courseware.
Right.
Versus a dev. That's how I identify IT pro. If someone says I'm an IT pro, my brain immediately thinks, oh, are you an MCT? I understand that may mean sysadmin or whatever, but mm-hmm. yeah, that's just how I identify that term.
Because if you think information technology professional, that's kind of an umbrella term that could be developers, could be admins,
it
like
could be. That's
kind of falls
correct.
Into all of it. But the line between admin and dev seems really blurry right now because we're all writing code and we're all trying to build pipelines essentially.
That's all it really is. And it's just about what are the materials that you're using to build that pipeline,
right.
Which, in my opinion, would make someone more of a dev versus an admin or IT pro. For example, IT pros slash admins typically work with scripting languages,
right?
Python, PowerShell,
mm-hmm.
And
I'm not going to say VBScript. I'm just going to hold it back. But
yeah, right. But the developers will work with code that needs to be compiled
right.
and it's not interpreted, right? So they're working with C#,
Java,
or Java,
yeah,
or Ruby even.
Yeah,
and Ruby's probably right there in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
I do know some admins that work in Ruby or Golang even. But yeah.
Where does JavaScript fall for you on that? Because
JavaScript, in my opinion, falls in the dev space.
Yeah. And yet it's sometimes interpreted, sometimes compiled, but I get what
correct.
You mean. I've also found often when you go low level on some sysadmin tools, it's like there's a way to write this expression that's actually a JavaScript expression. That's the way to solve this particular problem. And mm-hmm. they've even gone to a developer and said, hey, I need to fix this. And they'll get that little blob of JavaScript from the dev and paste it into their work as a solution to a problem.
That is exactly. And you know, we find that we use the same methods of writing our scripts that the devs use in writing their code.
Yeah.
They go to Google just like we do.
Sure.
And
search
they
first,
copy
right?
and they paste and they make it work. And that's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
So our behaviors are becoming more and more alike.
Yeah, that's interesting. But and then now we get into this idea that once upon a time, as an admin, I carried my scripts around with me on a 3.5-inch floppy. I mean, I did acquire it on 5.25, but nobody knows what that is anymore. And then a USB key, but they were my scripts. They weren't the company scripts. I was the only one that ever run them. I knew how they worked. I built them. More and more, I'm finding organizations where those scripts are assets of the company and everybody who's an admin needs access to them. Anybody could run them and you write them very differently as soon as somebody else needs to touch it.
Mm-hmm. I have spoken to this in a number of different groups.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, I wrote an article for a Collab Summit. And the article is about how there's this relationship and in any relationship, it behooves you to understand where the other person is coming from.
Sure.
And in this relationship, and it's dysfunctional at best, going between sysadmins and devs is really a relationship that happens from when I get an idea to producing this product to the end user.
Mm-hmm.
And scripts are part of that. These scripts, and I said, you know, we, as an admin, where you kept them on a USB key or you put them on a floppy,
right?
Or you put them on your desktop, right? You might put them in a file server or some file folder.
Sure.
And only you have access to them.
Yeah.
Right. Now, let's say that, hey, you know what? We got a big team. Oh, we're going to share that out. Well, okay. Oh, hey, you know what? What if we update them? Oh, gee, now I update, but don't put it in that folder. Keep it on your desktop.
Yeah.
Well, now Azure DevOps, which developers have been using for a long time, GitHub, which developers have been using for a long time, or any other source control repository, now the sysadmins are, you know what? We're going to start using this
stuff.
We
need this. Yeah, we have this problem.
We need this. And so now we put our scripts in there. And now in our group, right, we're all admins. No one is a developer. We use repos and Azure DevOps, and we're like, this is where you develop. This is where you update. We have PRs, I mean, pull requests.
Mm-hmm.
Two people on their team have to look at it, have to approve it. We're using the exact same processes. The exact same process.
And it's mature. Like, you just have to learn what the developers have already learned. I've always argued there's a book to be written called DevOps, When to Throw the Party. And it's like the day that admins come to devs for advice on source control is a day to throw a party.
Yeah.
Like, because it's a good day. They're going to be able to help you. You're going to be able. What I like about source control systems like that is it also is a way to show work that, hey, look, folks are contributing to these scripts all the time. They're, you can see their contributing records and you can see the updates that are being done. Like, these scripts are important. Plus, that's also a great intersection point in general. Often we're, as developers, interacting with the admins on deployment processes, being that continuous integration, continuous deployment pipeline. And so you want their code as part of that chain. And so it's code from all the sources living together.
And we're all one big happy family, singing and holding hands, singing Kumbaya.
Yeah, you know, it's tough to get to that point, but pizza helps.
Yes. And, you know, developers are a lot more introverted, it seems, at least in our environment, than the sysadmins.
Yeah.
But it's, we do. And you're right. It is cause to throw a party. We go to them for our processes. We take our cues from them. They're like, okay, we're not going to do this anymore. And we have a discussion in our group saying, hey, well, you know, engineering, devs, aren't doing that anymore. Should we?
Yeah. Does that still make sense?
You know, should we be doing that? Does that make sense for us? It may not, or it may not even apply to us. Oh, we don't even do that. So
yeah,
we don't have to worry about
that.
But their processes are a lot more mature than our own. And I think as admins, IT pros, if we look at those processes that devs do, we will understand them better, hence making the relationship less dysfunctional.
Mm-hmm.
And we're able to do things faster and better. That's just been my experience.
Sure. Yeah. No. And it's ways for them to work, or for us to routinely work closer together. You know, you're going to have the same merge struggles that the devs have had when two people work on the same script at some point, sooner or later, because GitHub is that permissive model where we can each been checked out and worked on some stuff and pushed it back. And the first time you're faced with that, to go talk to a dev team and go, hey, I got a merge conflict. Again, it's almost another, it's like, let me get you a beer. Congratulations. Like, that's a graduating moment. It's like, let's go look at the tools
well,
for fixing that merge problem.
We did it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Sit down here, Junior. Let me talk to you.
Yeah. There are good ways and bad ways to solve this. The bad one is you just overwrite the changes with your stuff. Good one is that you actually spend some time and look at the sets of changes, say, are we actually in conflict or not? Because maybe they will just merge together. I don't know. Let's go take a look.
And that whole process of it brings people to the table and says, hey, what's really going on here? Which is really what you want.
Oh, sure. You know,
you want the discussion to happen.
And for me, as someone who's managed a lot of teams like that, any moment where I can, when each team can see that the other team's job is hard. Because the easiest thing with the other is like, I don't know what those people spend all their time doing. Their job is easy. Right? So the moment you can be confronted with the difficulties of their job is a moment of respect. It sort of lifts up. It's like, hey, we're all fighting a hard fight here. Everybody's job's got some challenges in it. And the moments where we can reflect, I'm just like, hey, been there, felt that pain, friend. Like, it's a good one. Let's go work through. I'll help you work through it. It'll be easier next time. Don't worry.
Or spreading out the pain.
Yeah.
You know, we've actually worked on that, and this is how we did it. Or, you know what? You don't have to do that. We could do that for you.
And I think that's a really powerful one, that when we were able to have the good conversations between the teams, that often you found something that was very difficult from an administrative perspective was easily solved by code.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, when we could bring a senior dev into a firefight on a weekend, you know, I'm thinking e-commerce sites were struggling to stay up and it's always a new feature. And that was the problem child, right? And marketing's done their job. The site's super busy and we're trying to stay alive, and to have a dev there. Rule number one being you can't write any code because there's no chance you're going to make the situation better with more code. But just to witness the process, see how we fight that firefight, how we keep the systems alive, what we're doing. Invariably, the thing comes out is we need better instrumentation. Like, it's hard to see what the app is doing. But when a dev sees that, they tackle that problem totally different than a min would.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I've found that sometimes we can look at what the devs are doing and see what they're struggling at. And we're like, you know what? We would do this differently.
Sure.
As a matter of fact, you're writing code and to do this thing when really a little bit of PowerShell, a lot less code than what you're doing,
yeah,
would totally take care of the problem that you're doing.
Without a doubt.
And you give them that little bit of code and they're like, oh, huh. They shrug their shoulders and they move on.
Yeah, move it on. And Rick, I got to interrupt for one moment for this very important message. This episode of Run As is brought to you by the Azure Data Conference at the MGM Grand Hotel in Las Vegas, December 4th to 9th. You've heard the data Q&A shows published on Run As twice a week from the conference. That is a microcosm of the 6 days of fantastic learning available to you from the real-world consultants and members of the Azure Data team that speak at the show. Learn proven problem-solving techniques and technologies you can implement immediately and gain insight into Microsoft's data strategies for the cloud and on-premises. Get answers to performance monitoring, troubleshooting, designing for scale and performance, working in the cloud, and exploring all the new features of the latest versions of Azure Data and Microsoft SQL Server. And if you still have questions by the end of the week, join the conference's closing session and be part of the Data Q&A show on Run As Radio. The Azure Data Conference is at the MGM Grand Hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada, December 4th to 9th. Use code RUNAS to get a discount on your registration at azuredataconf.com, and I'll see you there. And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. That's Rick Taylor. We're talking a little bit about what devs can teach sysadmins and certainly vice versa, too, because when they have those conversations, often we find out there's areas where we can make lives easier in either case. But I think as we're getting more sophisticated in writing code as admins, PowerShell specifically, but there are others as well, there are other practices that developers do that I think are really important. Source control is certainly a powerful one. But what about testing? Like, when we're talking about a sophisticated PowerShell script, now I've seen a few out there that scare the snot out of me. Like, you get to a point where you're afraid to touch them because you're only going to break it. Like, the idea that we could put a testing harness on it to know, does this do what we expected to do with these changes or not? Do you see that?
Well, in our particular case, and we've shared this with our devs, using infrastructure provisioning tools helps us create the environment in which if it blows up, it's cool. Guess what? Because that
it's
tool just destroyed it,
and it
rebuilt everything exactly the same. So we could actually go, and this is one thing that devs are really bad at, and they know it, is that when you've heard the term or the phrase, well, it works on my machine.
Yes.
Okay, and why is that? It's because wherever you are testing it is not the same as wherever it's going.
Never.
Or where it came from.
Right.
So admins using infrastructure provisioning tools can now do this simple. We take a snapshot of wherever it needs to go to, and we make it like what we're going to test against.
Right.
And then we do it vice versa.
And in the cloud, so it's literally by the minute. I don't have to buy hardware for this. I can just light it up and try it.
Light it up. We test it. We can automate the testing. Mm-hmm. Does it work? Great. We can even record it.
Yeah.
So that now we want to replay it in a UAT environment. Great. That's the way it needs to work. Great. Do we have it? Because it's all being logged, we can rebuild it over and over and over again. So repeatability is the key to testing.
Sure.
I want to be able to repeat the building of that environment and making sure that that is exactly what prod looks like.
Right.
We look at prod, we suck out its configuration and everything, and we make that our testing environment.
I battled, we had a group of web dev testers, good QA folks that really were good at exercising the website, but they had written so many tests that the complete integration test took more than 24 hours to run. And it was awesome. But it was kind of worthless too, because everybody would check their stuff in. It's like, okay, we're running a test, and there was you went on to other things while the tests were running. When the results finally came back, you had to go back to your old code that had problems. And I tell you the story because it became a great exercise in automating infrastructure. So what we did was we divvied up the tests over almost 100 instances. So we could run the entire thing in less than 20 minutes. So we just harnessed the cloud. But there were pluses and minuses to that. The tests were uneven and some things ran faster than others and some tests needed to be run together. So we had problems with that. But the practice of building a script that said, make me 100 copies of this website infrastructure and then load up and just run them all on other people's hardware on the cloud costs us a few hundred dollars. But then you also have to automate shutting all that stuff off.
Yes. And we have worked with a partner who, because we were doing that exact same thing, made a feature, a new feature in their own product that would scan our environments, all three clouds, and say, okay, guess what? There's idle time here. Shut it down.
Right.
Schedule it so that every morning at 6 a.m., it comes back up. Or it stays off until the user goes and tries to do something on that cloud, and boop, it automatically comes up.
Clicks up a routine that starts lighting things up again and so forth. Like that's, these automations get really powerful. The funny part is like, there's a question of how valuable that was one way or the other. We were trying to shorten the test cycle, which certainly was valuable for that team. But the practice of doing it taught us so much about building reliable infrastructure.
It's like the teacher learns more when they teach it to a student. Sure. It's the exact same thing. When you're trying to make something happen, you learn a lot.
Yeah, you press against the edges and find all the weaknesses in that. Because it has to be automated. You're just doing it routinely. If it has to be touched every time, and if you only do it once in a while, if we're only pushing to prod 4 times a year, that's going to stay manual. But if you're pushing to prod every day, that needs to be automated.
Correct. I have a kind of a chart that says, how much time should you spend building this automation? And then the axes are, well, how many times do you do it a day?
Right.
And how much time are you going to save?
Yeah. Find that ROI.
And then you do the intersection. You get to the intersection. It's like, okay, if you spend more than this, it's not worth it.
Right.
You know, you're going to have to save me more time in order to be able to spend more time to build this automation to make it worth it.
And also, I think the part of it is we're still only so good at building automations, too, because they tend to be fairly unique. Like, you only make so many of them. You're not going to be super fast at that. So it does need to have a pretty good return.
Yeah. And it's, you know, not everything needs to be automated, although we all say, automate all the things. Yes. Well, not all the things are going to be automated. Yeah. I mean, just some things just will not, should not.
Because those automations also need maintenance. Like, you are building yourself some overhead here.
Mm-hmm. And that's actually how you sold yourself on automating it, right?
Right.
We won't have to manage the thing. We only have to manage the automation of the thing.
Right.
Well, what makes you think that that's less work or it's going to take you less time?
Well, I hope it is.
It may not.
But you're not as skilled at it. You do need to learn how to manage those automations to get good at it, to validate them. But yeah, the testing side of, do we have confidence this works? And that I can make these changes and know when I push these in, we're not going to break everything. Because for better or worse, code is this great amplifier, right? And it can amplify your intelligence, but it can also amplify your stupidity.
Or your carelessness, negligence.
Yes.
Yeah, because if you have bad habits and you are coding, they will be manifest.
Yeah, they will show in your code, for better or worse.
And whatever that is, you know, I document my code. Well, you know, 500 lines proved that that was not true. You know, I don't know what this does. No. Why are you using abbreviations? What is this? Yeah.
Yeah, not necessarily there. You know, you mentioned at the beginning of the show that you had a specialist in GCP and a specialist in AWS, and you were the specialist for Azure. Now you guys have grown, but you're now speaking across all of them. Did it ultimately show that the clouds were sufficiently common that it's reasonable to work on them all?
Yes. And the business actually makes the decision on what gets deployed where.
Right.
So in our case, the business has deemed that GCP is where we will build most infrastructure. So most production infrastructure, whether that be a database or a file server or whatever will typically be built in GCP because of costs.
Right. It's inexpensive.
It's less expensive than Azure or AWS. If there is a networking issue, for example, we bought some product or we want to do a certain thing, that networking is better for, let's say, CDNs, is better in AWS than it is in Azure or GCP.
Right.
So we will deploy that in AWS. Or if it's for a particular, this particular group decided that, you know what, we're really familiar with Azure, we want to do it there, and we're not building the infrastructure, okay, then we go to Azure for that particular use. Now, our engineering department is almost all Azure. I think our .com is on Azure. So,
does locale matter? Are all the big three got enough sufficient locales around the world that doesn't matter where your customer is, it's going to be fine?
Pretty much. The GCP and Azure they have data centers all over the world.
Right.
They're very heavily invested in the Western United States.
Sure. Yeah. So North America, Western Europe, you're going to get your biggest bang.
Correct. AWS is everywhere. I mean, just literally everywhere. And So customers are going to find it.
Yeah.
Get to it.
I thought Azure had a really great network that doesn't matter where I went, I could find a data center pretty darn close by. But I think
and they actually have a very good DOD and other sovereign states. For example, China is very, very restrictive.
Right.
And the DOD is very, very restrictive. So Azure actually has different products for those types, whereas GCP is not there and AWS is not there yet.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the penetration in South America is sort of South America and Africa seem to be suffering the most in terms of just not a lot of on-continent cloud presence.
Right. Yeah, it's a lot slower.
Yeah, but yeah, and I've got family in New Zealand as well. And generally speaking, if you're on the cloud in New Zealand, you're in Australia.
Right.
Country's just a bit too small to actually have its own major data centers in it, but. It is interesting to watch that sort of spreading around the world, and you start to appreciate the undersea cable map. You know, there are ends to the internet. Southern Africa, New Zealand, kind of the far edge of the internet. If you only worked in North America, Western Europe, you're just used to so much connectivity. It always works. Like
it's not, always there.
Not
it's,
an
yeah,
issue. It's,
yeah.
So, but that's not the criteria for selecting a data center, selecting a provider necessarily. What tools do you know? What are you already working with? Who do you have the accounts with? And then what costs make sense based on the services you're using?
Correct. Yeah. We've found that when I've worked with our coworkers in, where are they located? In Mexico, that wasn't so bad. But the ones in Colombia, very spotty.
Tough. Yeah. Tough place to get to. Once you get into South America, like Brazil will do okay. Everybody, and even Argentina is all right, but anything down the west side, Chile, Peru, Colombia, Ecuador. Yeah.
Chile was rough. I was working in a mine there for 4 months on their infrastructure divestiture. We were selling it to a company in Canada.
Oh.
So London Mining, I think they're based out of Toronto. They bought the rights to that mine out of Chile. And so Freeport McMoRan out of Phoenix was selling it to London and Canada. And so we went down, we built a whole new, what we call the intermediate environment, and moved all the assets there so that the Canadian counterparts could pick it up. And oh boy, it was rough. I mean, literally just a couple miles away, they were having modem lines, and it was
dial-up still exists. Yeah.
Yes.
You just take and for granted.
And this was, what, 2015, 2016?
Yeah. Yeah, I have to wonder if today, in a situation like that, you wouldn't just show up with a couple of Starlink dishes.
Yeah.
You know, go satellite.
Yeah.
Now that's a possibility. It's a strange new world, friend. Any places you point folks to learn more about taking advantage of these dev practices for their administration work?
Yes. So, Udemy has a lot of courses that they call DevOps for IT Pros. for admins.
Yeah.
Pluralsight also has them. Microsoft, the Azure DevOps Labs are right. built for both, whether you are a dev or an IT pro. And they go through, it's very easy. You get a free Azure account and you download, it builds everything for you. Demo generator builds the websites for you and tells you how to do it step by step. A lot of blogs and YouTube is up. I couldn't believe, I mean, everything is, I'm just recently learning, you know, you can even fix your car. You watch a couple of YouTube. they show you how to do every little thing. I don't know how people find the time to actually film themselves doing
and such this precise thing. Stuff. I literally found the fan controller for my furnace that a guy had made the video of changing that controller for my particular model and literally walked it through step by step. Not the greatest video known to man. I mean, he basically just had his iPhone sitting there while he was doing it, but it was enough to guide me to change out that controller.
Isn't that amazing?
It's extraordinary. Like,
I felt like I could do anything. No, okay, let me come back down to earth. No, okay. You're changing your brakes.
Yeah.
I mean, just some of this. And there was one, I had a... Oh, what was that car? A Mini Cooper.
Right.
Okay. And I needed to change something. And I watched the YouTube video, my mod, everything. And I'm like, you know, if I watch this enough times, I'll be able to do this. But the prep in order for me to do what this guy is doing is not worth it. I'm going to pay the $1,000 for a mechanic to do this. Yes. Do I think I could do this? Yeah. But you know what? My aggravation and time is not worth it.
And that's also a valuable video too, just to show the hurdle you have to climb over so that you recognize this is what I pay a professional for. Wait, I mean, it does beg a question. You know, folks like Carvana, like this part of your job too, is to help folks get going on these practices.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it might be worth bringing in an advisor, a consultant, to help you build up those practices.
I would highly recommend it. If right now we are using what the developers do. So as an infrastructure IT pro, we typically work on waterfall projects.
Yep.
You don't usually do agile because you're not really writing code. But you know what? We have found that we can adapt agile Scrum to infrastructure. And that's what we're doing now. And so we brought, you know, we had our storyboarding just a few days ago. And we just thought, wow, this is amazing. But, you know, this is something that developers have been doing for a long time. And now we've got our story point cards. And we're like, wow, this is really cool.
It's a good way to go.
Developers are looking at us that are thinking, man, where have you guys been? We're like, no, this is something new. This is nice. This is great.
It's a great way to organize that information because generally speaking, especially dealing with cloud infrastructure, you're just building new ones and moving the workload over. So it's not like you have the update problems that a DBA has or even the update problems that a developer has. So you can adapt to that fairly quickly, but you only need the agile practice if the infrastructure changes are reflected in code demand. So
that is right.
And they dragged you in because they wanted their new thing to work and you were able to adapt to it.
Yes. And so since everything that we do is now in code, it is code. So, you know, I mean, do I dare say that we're developers?
Really? Don't say that, Rick. What are you doing?
Don't I know, man. Blasphemy, right?
Well, but it's also acknowledgement that there's always been code for all of us, right? Whether it was the DBAs writing SQL, the developers writing their Java and C#, or us writing in our various scripting languages, there's always been some code. It's just that now we seem to be levelizing on shared code practices that make us all better as a consequence. And part of that is because we are intersecting. They want your infrastructure code as part of their build process.
That's right.
Right. And arguably,
testing process. Yeah.
Well, what it is it's blowing up the wall once and for all. Nobody's hurling code over the wall to you saying, hey, deploy this. Right. It is all part of us contributing our various pieces of code together into a pipeline that pushes those apps up.
Yeah, I wrote. As a matter of fact, so that illustration you just gave was a project that I just finished where so in Carvana, so you can buy cars online. The whole process, I mean, in a matter of minutes.
Cool.
You go on an app on your phone. You click, I want that kind of a car. How would you like to finance it? Are you going to finance it? Would you like I would like financing. Okay. You know, put all your information in here in a couple of minutes. There's your financing.
It's an integrated pipeline.
So all these, it's integrated. So what they need to do in the back end these loan documents, because they have to send this out to lenders.
Yep.
They send those out to, so DriveTime, which you might have heard of, which is actually where Carvana came from, mm-hmm. now does all the financing and all that kind of processing of all the loan documents. So it goes from Carvana to DriveTime.
Right.
So that code that does all that, they have a pipeline that they wrote all the code that grabs all the information from that website and puts it in a PDF. Now, what does it do? Well, it goes into an Azure Blob storage. Well, okay, then what? Well, we need to get it over to the DriveTime. So now they talk to the IT pro guys. Mm-hmm. And the IT pro guys say, oh, yeah, I got some PowerShell code that will copy it from that Blob storage over to Blob storage over here. I just need a couple of writes. Oh, no problem. The IT guys over there write some code that says, hey, if you see this service account, give it these writes.
Right.
And boom.
Ta-da, data magically moves.
Data, and it deletes it when it's successful.
Yep.
And retries it if it's not. And now we don't even touch it.
Yeah. It just works. Fun times, man. That's really cool.
Yes.
And it's neat projects. I mean, I remember, you know, the old DevOps folks, the Jez Humbles and so forth, talking about that delight phase that you got to a point in these workflows where you're just working on cool stuff all the time. One of the things you just described is very much like that, right? It's like it's a set of problems that could be turned into a huge project, but when we involve all the different types of roles there, often we can find those simple scripting solutions. Or, you know, I'm going to need a piece of code, but it looks like this, and the dev will go off and build that in a sprint, and you'll see that in the next cycle. Like, these are enjoyable times when the teams work like that. It's just worth it to get there.
It really is.
Hey, Rick, really fun to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming on the show again. Really,
thank you for inviting me. I love it. I love it. Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.